everybody. I'm Chad Eckert. That's Joe Idoni, and it's also Rick Run Good. What up? We are the Preferred Lines Podcast. You can follow us. You're clearly doing that on iTunes or maybe tomorrow, tonight, way later. But right now, Periscope and YouTube. So chat along live. We're here. We can actually see your questions. It's going to be fun. Hello, friends. All of our friends watching Grimmy in his garage, hitting that Ortiz live master, hitting the mega profit on Ortiz. I love that. Tonight, we've got a big guest because it's a big week. It's the Masters. It's starting. Let's crack some beers. Let's get to Rick Grungood. What up, buddy? Rick Gaiman.
What's going on? Guys, it's here. Finally. Took a little longer than expected, but finally a Masters tournament. Can't wait.
And, well, Joe, you've made a content piece using Fantasy Nationals model. We've done some content already, but we're probably not the content kings that Rick is. God, how do you have time for us? Hell,
I don't sleep. I think is the way that it goes. Yeah.
Well, you don't have kids, so that helps, right?
Yeah. No kids. My wife now edits my videos, so RickRunGood.com is a two man team. So
what are we doing, Chad?
Yeah. I know. We're for the best. All we're doing is following your footsteps, Rick. So just keep going, and we'll just follow. We'll just trail along. We're in your tow.
All good. I love it. It is. It's going to be awesome, dude. This week's going to be phenomenal. If you thought there was a lot of content before, like, this week's out of control.
Juicy. All right. Well, let's get this going. Are you ready to walk down Magnolia Lane?
I am. No azaleas blooming though in November, right?
Yeah, but they got some pretty leaves.
That's true.
We'll see. I don't know. Okay,
all right, Rick. All right. Here's how we do this.
Yes.
So we treat it as sort of a rapid fire type segment. Chad and I are going to go back and forth to all things that pertain to 2020 Masters. But first, we have some exciting news to share. We now at the Preferred Lines have a presenting sponsor. Whoa, right?
Who is it?
It's actually something that you are quite familiar with, Rick. The Preferred Lines podcast/show will now to you every week by our sponsor and friends over at Jock Market.
I know those guys.
Great guys, right? We tried it out, loved the concept, made a little bit of money this past weekend, despite not totally knowing what we're doing, but we're proud to have them on as a partner and supporter of the show. Real quick, what is Jock Market, you may be asking? I'm going to tell you. It's where daily fantasy becomes a stock exchange. There's essentially an IPO that releases on Wednesday before the PGA Tour events. You place an initial bid. You may get some shares. You may not get some shares, but you can buy and sell those shares as the event is going on in live action time. For straight cash, homie, at the end of each event, those shares pay out a guaranteed amount depending on how well your player does. They've got a ton of huge bonuses coming up this week for the Masters and promos that they're running. 20K in cash payouts, all kind of bonuses for highest ROI and lowest ROI, weekly PGA and NFL events every week they're running. Jock Market is awesome. We're excited to partner with them. Sign up this week. Us in a little photo, screenshot us your first deposit, and they're going to throw $10 in your account at no charge. Just for being a fan, we're excited for Jock Market, and that, my friends, is our first ever ad read.
Can I jump in on this? Can I get in on this action?
Get in. Tell us all about it.
So first of all, this is not necessarily a new idea, right? Stock market sports, like there was a lot of different versions of this that have failed, and Jock Market is doing it right, where it's almost like Robinhood. Like if you have the Robinhood app, it's very easy to use. I'm addicted to it. It's the only fantasy football that I play because there's cash markets on NFL. So I had 11 shares of Josh Allen this week, which by the way, going very well. So highly encourage everybody to get on the Jock Market.
So you're doing NFL too? I thought you're only golf.
I know nothing. I literally, it popped up at like 8:30 this morning. It was like IPO closes at 9 or whatever. And I'm like, all right, let me buy some shares. The only shares I got, I was walking the dog. The only shares I got was Josh Allen. It makes me look like a genius at the moment.
God, well, damn you. Let's the rich get richer.
Let's start there, Rick, with Jock Market. So new people to it, Chad and myself included, are people that may be signing up this week as part of the Masters promos. Give us like a quick, brief rundown and any tips you may have for like a first timer.
Yeah. So the way that this works is, so when you're bidding an IPO, you're bidding on, you know, there's two versions. There's a cash market. That's your actual dollars. And I'm sure they're going to have a free roll where, you know, they give you 250 chips and then you can allocate them differently. But for the cash market, each share is real dollars. So you're seeing before IPO closes, Bryson might be $12 a share. You might be bidding at $12. But the way that the rankings work, the valuations, at the end of the tournament, whoever is basically the highest scoring player, which is basically whoever wins the golf tournament, that share is $25. So Carlos Ortiz this week for the Houston Open, I don't know what his shares were going for, an IPO, probably a couple of bucks, turned all of those into $25, real dollars, cash money. So golf's a volatile sport, gentlemen. I like to go down and get some of those guys, like Mackenzie Hughes this week would have been a good one because he would have been a couple bucks and he would have finished in the top 10. Finding a lot of that value is super, super handy. And it's a lot of fun to follow throughout the week. You can sell anytime you want.
So you were contemplating selling somebody. Who was it? Did you
Jason
sell
Day? No. So I contemplated it after round two, round three. I still made money on it, but he faltered on Sunday. I'd have to check. I had like 10 or 12 shares of him, I think. But he disappointed me on Sunday, but overall turned me a profit. So I can't be too upset.
So you want to sell high. That's what the goal is in this thing, right?
It's the name of the game. Buy low, sell high, right? That's with everything. You can equate it to value plays on other fantasy sites. You can equate it to sleepers. You can equate it to whatever you want. Buy low, sell high. Yeah.
So then are you going to do a how-to video so I can just watch that and learn everything like you do for everything else?
So we actually – I dedicate Wednesday live chats. So my Wednesday live chat, I dedicate like 6 or 7 minutes to Jock Market. I look at the – because at that point – IPO's in full swing. It's roaring. So
and it's crazy. It's weird.
Dude, the final like 15 minutes is freaking fire. Unbelievable. Okay. It is like you've got to be on it. It's a lot of fun. It's like, okay, I don't know if you guys ever did this like on eBay like 10 years ago. Snipe in the last second and get and like win the like that's what's going on, man. It's crazy.
So there is some strategy to wait until the last second.
So I like to wait just in general because like I have my notifications on. So like I know when I get outbid on somebody.
Oh, okay.
So I don't want to like Joe DM'd me the other day. And who'd you like? Cam Davis, right?
I did. I lost him. But I got Brooks. Like I made a lot of money on Brooks. So yeah. It worked out. But yeah,
so
Cam Davis.
I was going to bid on Cam, but I didn't want to have you get an alert that you had just been outbid. Because then you would have kept bidding me up. So yeah. Like I was waiting for as long as possible because I didn't like I don't want those notifications to go out to people who have shares.
So it's exactly like eBay.
Yeah, how many total shares are out there for each player? Do you have any idea?
I don't think they disclose that because it's a liquidity thing. But from what I can tell, it won't let you buy. I think it's like I also think it depends on what the price is, but
that's what I figured.
25-ish, I would say, is my best guess, but don't quote me on that.
All right, so then when are you going to have those tools on your website?
I don't do so good with, like, the live stuff. You know, the stuff is changing every second, not really up my alley. But,
we can use your leaderboard that's on your website and maybe glean some things and capitalize off of that.
Definitely could. Definitely,
that's free.
Round or in the middle of round, it's free. It's like, that should not be free. I should be charging for that. But, yes, it's absolutely free.
I tell all my friends to go there if they need it.
So, all right, gentlemen. We have finally made it. We've been waiting almost 20 months for this week. Rick, give us your quick thoughts on what we're going to see from Augusta National in November versus what we typically see and we're used to every year.
I'm not usually good at quick thoughts, but here we go. So, depending on the wind, if it's a northerly wind, which is not usually the wind that you get at Augusta, it can play a lot longer. Now, Tiger and Sebastian Munoz, weird pairing, but they've both given anecdotes about playing Augusta National in November. They both said they hit like driver 3-wood into 1 and 18. It can play very, very long. Now, we'll see. I think they dodged a bullet. It looks like it's not going to be too cold, but it does look like it's going to be wet. That now opens up a lot more things for bombers. Talk about Bryson, talk about DJ. We can talk more about Bryson in a second, but I just in general think with cooler temperatures, not necessarily cold, potentially an opposite wind and wet conditions, I think it's going to play longer than we normally see.
Okay. Well, what about the abundance of storylines, including the defending champion is Tiger Woods? Hello. Oh, that's great. What are we doing with him, though? Can we trust him? Do we like his chances to repeat? You got the hat on.
Yeah. You know, this is really the most prank. Support I can get behind on Tiger this week, I think, is I can rock the hat for him. But, I mean, it's bad. I mean, you talk about lead-in form. You know, his eight starts before the 2019 Masters, he was gaining in every single shot. He was gaining in every single strokes gain category. The game was sharp. His eight starts leading into this year are bad, objectively bad. I mean, he's basically two shots worse now than he was leading up to the 2019 Masters. We have seen nothing in the 2020 calendar year to give us any level of confidence in his game. So I know it's sacrilegious, but like I cannot, I'll be happy if he wins, but I won't be making any money if Tiger wins this week.
I think it's a pretty safe call that the story of the week is probably going to be centered around Bryson DeChambeau. I tweeted out an article yesterday from golf.com. I think it was Sandy Lyle or one of the older guys who played with him. And he basically had eight irons into all four of the par fives during a practice round that they played. Is he poised to just ruin the sacred ground of Augusta National this week, Rick?
Probably. Yeah. So I mean, listen, I think what he's doing is he's opening up the volatility, right? He's opening up the range of outcomes. If he's going to do what he wants to do, he's going to have to take a couple of very aggressive lines. He's going to have to hit huge high draws where he flies at 350 yards. I mean, it's going to be tough to do, but if anybody can do it, it's him.
Is this in play?
That might be in play. Yeah.
On
13, when he's going to try to hit this big high draw, cut the corner and land it up on like 14 kind of fairway area, like that, he could be staring wrong, it goes horribly wrong. But I do think the wetter it is probably good for him. So I don't know if you guys remember this. It was probably like Rocket Mortgage. He's hitting it so much further than he used to. He's hitting a lot of half wedges, three quarter wedges into greens now. And on firm and fast conditions, like that's actually a lot more difficult because you can't get enough spin on it. Receptive, if it's soft, and he can hit just a little three-quarter wedge at all these pins, land it the right distance and get it to stop, I think he might destroy it.
Yeah. How do we know if it's going to be wet? Who's your weather tout should we follow? How do we know? Is there AccuWeather, or what do you use?
I use Weather Underground. Is that not a good source?
No, I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
well, probably the chewer junkie guys. We got to be like, stick your thumb out the window or whatever.
Yeah, seems like it's going to be kind of, you know, rainish every day. Wind will, you know, that changes, so we'll keep an eye on it. But yeah, it seems like it's going to be pretty wet.
What about DJ? Now he just almost won at Houston. Is it better that he didn't win, or are we happy that he didn't win?
Because
he's going to win the Masters, right? At some point. Is it this year?
Crazy, only has one major championship. Like, how crazy?
Same with JT. I can't believe it.
It's absolutely bonkers. I mean, DJ's, you know, I kind of joked, like, I wanted to see how much rust he had. And he was definitely rusty in Houston, but it lasted 12 holes. Like, I mean, he went out in three over on Thursday, and that was it. He's like, oh, okay, I'm Dustin Johnson again. Let me just go scorch earth, which is absolutely crazy. Of course, he sets up well for Augusta National. So I'm, you know, I don't know if we do picks at the end of this show or whatever, but like, I'm like seriously torn about Bryson and DJ at the moment. If you look at it from a fantasy perspective, you're probably getting built-in value because he's $10,000 and now he's the second shortest odds on the board. So there's probably built-in value already. Probably comes pretty popular because of that. But like, these two guys are just rocking and rolling for Augusta.
Well, speaking of guys that we saw sort of tear up Houston this week, Brooks, baby. I saw what I needed to see, but I'm deeply biased on Brooks. Are we sleeping on major season Brooks Koepka right now a little bit?
He was the putter.
It was definitely the putter. It was definitely the putter. It was definitely the short game.
Don't say that, Chad.
He gained like 8.5 strokes around and on the greens. And there is a little bit of something to this. So Kyle Porter, we recorded our Houston Open recap for CBS Sports. And he was like, yeah, like before Brooks wins, he top 10s the event before, like every time, like a lot.
He's done four majors.
And I didn't really believe it. So I looked it up and I was like, holy crap. Like I just like he foreshadows it, right? It's not just flipping this way. Like he kind of foreshadows it a little bit, which might be what we saw from Houston to Augusta, but I am a little bit just like, you know, that's fool's gold. 6.5 strokes putting, okay. Another two around the greens. That to me, I'm cautious. Let's say that.
Did you said on Rick or on Mayo's show that you would take him over, or you would take Morikawa over Brooks? Do you still feel that same way, even though you saw Brooks seems like he's healthy?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't take too much from the Houston Open stuff. The health is great, right? You know what I mean? Like, I love that he's healthy. I love that we're talking about his game as opposed to talking about the knee. But is Brooks Koepka going to gain 6.5 strokes putting 2 weeks in a row? Probably not. It's kind of weird, right? I mean, I think I mentioned this on Mayo. Our brains are trained on Morikawa to be like, yo, he's super consistent. He makes cuts. He does this. Like, not really. Like, not all that much, right? But that's good for him. He's going to win more often. He's going to miss the cut more often. He's opened up the volatility. I actually like that from him. I think it's great.
What about my guy? I like JT. He's performed better every time he's played at Augusta. His best performance was last season. It was T12. Do we like JT? Because, I mean, I feel like he might be overlooked because you've got Rahm there. You got everyone likes Bryson, and now DJ's showing up. You get the savings with Xander and Brooks. What about JT, Justin Thomas, one major guy?
I think that, like game theory speaking, right? Like, you're talking about guys being overlooked. You're talking about guys that are probably going to come in at a lower ownership. JT's certainly that guy. It's weird, right? He gets overshadowed by DJ being phenomenal, Rahm being phenomenal, Bryson breaking the game. Xander's been like in contention every single week. Justin Thomas won like 7 starts ago and he top 10 the US Open. Like, he's playing great. The other thing about this, and you saw this in Houston this week, when they have those closely mown areas around the greens, those runoffs, those elevated greens, tricky kind of awkward short game situations, guys can't handle it, right? I mean, we saw some of the shot tracker stuff from Houston. I mean, they were bleeding strokes around the green. JT is not only probably the best iron player in the game, he might be one of the best short game players in the game. I mean, his up and down stuff is unbelievable. So I do think he really sets up well here. I do agree with you, Chad. I think he's like completely overlooked just because everyone else has been next level.
I don't know this next guy. I don't know if I would say overlooked, but it's certainly been a little bit of quiet around the Rory McIlroy talk. Obviously, he has the narrative of going for the career Grand Slam, but he just hasn't seemed to have it since the return. Do you think is that the fans? What is it? Is he just out of form, or is he just waiting to peak?
I think it's a lot of things. I think that some of them are quantifiable and some of them are not, right? I mean, he was very candid that he wasn't getting, you know, he's so used to getting energy off fans, and that has gone for him. I mean, you think about it. There's like 7 guys on the PGA Tour that don't play golf in front of less than like 10,000 people at a time. I mean, it's all the big names. Rory McIlroy, every single round, no matter what it is, he's got throngs of guys out there. So a big change for him. Obviously, he had his baby girl. He said that kept him, you know, preoccupied. His mind wasn't there. But you look at it. I mean, we are in a stretch of golf for Rory McIlroy where his approach game is pedestrian, okay? So he's played 38 rounds since the restart. He's barely over field average on his approach game. And I could only find one other 38-round stretch where he was worse with his irons in his entire career. So this is historically bad for Rory. Now, Joe, I could argue the other side is like he's still finishing pretty well even though he's been field average in the most important stat there is. Like, his floor is very, very high. I'm concerned about the ceiling.
Okay. Hey, what about course history? Now, we know the Masters in Augusta, you have to have good course history, but what if a guy has good course history, but they're kind of playing iffy coming in? Do we ignore their recent form, like a Stenson, for example, or even a Rose, where they've been just so dominant all, you know, in their careers here, but they've kind of been a little bit bad coming in? Do we still go back to those guys?
So I'm not a course history guy. So let me preface this by saying that. But if there was ever a place to be a course history guy, it's here. I mean, the numbers bear it out. This is the strongest correlation year over year because you get a similar field, you get a similar course, obviously different time of year, but like it plays so consistently every single year. So even the model says this is the place to kind of deal with course history. And spoke with Ricky Fowler a couple days ago. Plug, how about that?
Huge.
Schmaw. Got that one in there. Thank you. So,
oh my God.
Nice listen.
So he was actually kind of referencing, like, he was alluding to basically anybody can find like they can rekindle that magic here. You have to know the quadrants where to be able to hit it. You have to learn these greens, which is something that we hear about all the time. So I really do think that there is this week more than most a chance that guys that are playing poorly coming in find that magic because of their experience around here.
You know, I listened to the show you did with Ricky, and he did mention that on almost every green there, while they are rather large greens, there's about half of it that you just can't hit it to. Does that, you know, one of the biggest historical trends we're going to hear a ton about this week is the lack of success of first timers. That probably plays a part in it, but are you immediately just crossing out the Schefflers, the Wolfs, the Morikawas this week and just moving on? Or is that a little bit, people look too much into that?
So I'm not crossing those guys off. So the narrative that we always get is that, you know, no first timer has won since what, Fuzzy Zeller in 77 or 78, whatever it is. Like, you're going to hear that 900 times. You're going to hear it 900 times this week. They never say how first timers do outside of winning, right? Like, there's plenty of guys who have finished inside the top 10, the top 8, you know, top 12, especially you're looking at like their value. They just don't win. I mean, winning's hard on the PGA Tour, let alone at Augusta National. And then I would also argue that this week more than ever, and this is what I was trying to get out of Ricky, is I asked him like, dude, you've played here 10 years. Like, you know this course in April, how it's going to play. Are you just going to get like smacked upside the head when it's completely different in November and it's going to take you two rounds to figure this out? Like, you could make a case that without patrons, with a different setup, if it does play a lot different, which I don't think it will, but if it does play a lot different, first timers could have like an edge. Like, I actually believe that this year.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, all right. So what else are we going to talk about? We got to talk about DraftKings, of course.
Yeah. We won't talk about it. We'll go anywhere.
You're like a DraftKings guy. I mean, you almost want, well, you could have won $1 million if you put the lineup in the right contest, Rick. When was this? A couple years ago? Drew.
Oh my God.
Matthews when was won? This? Sorry to bring that up.
18, I guess. 18 Masters?
But you still won enough. You still won a little bit of money on that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was the optimal lineup. It would have won anything, but I guess I would have split the milli. But
so how do you come up with the optimal lineup? You just click and it happened and it was a great week?
Yeah, I mean, so basically I had a core of 20 lineups that I do, and the core had basically the guys who finished second, third, fourth, fifth, or something like that. And then
How great is that?
And then every time I change one of those guys, I swap another guy in, and one of the swaps I made was to Patrick Reed. So basically that lineup, it was – and it also had somebody who made an ace on Sunday, Hoffman?
Maybe Hoffman.
Yeah, on like 16 on Sunday, and I like checked my phone at like at the turn, I was like, oh shit, can I curse on this? Is that okay?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I was like, oh shit, like I might be live in this. Like, this is like, he just made an ace. Like, Henley's on a run here. I know I've got guys like, and it was a lot of fun. It's good to get, you know, get that experience being deep and stuff. And I mean, I don't even play a lot of lineups every week, but it's good to, you know, be in it, in the mix in a huge event like the Masters.
Do you think the Masters is actually softer in terms of the competition? Because you got all these casuals, these NFL guys that are like, whatever, I'll put some money into the Masters. I know everything. Oh, here's Spieth, 84. Oh God, all in. Are we going to get a little bit of, can we have an edge if we know things this week?
It is interesting. So in most majors, yeah, it is really interesting that we're going up against NFL, right? Like, all these guys who are just playing NFL, they've got money in the account. They're ready to rock and roll. There's not usually a Masters here. I do think it'll be super soft. The pricing kind of equals that out though, boys. Mm. Like, it's so soft. You can make really sick lineups. So you kind of lose the edge there, but I do think there's going to be a lot of.
So then, do you leave $1,000 off the table? Is that a thing?
I leave $1 million on the table. Like, okay. I don't know if this is right or wrong, but I'm telling you, there is. I've done a lot of research on this. I mean, think about this, right? Okay, I'm scrolling through the player pool for this week. So, is there a big difference between Cam Champ and Brendan Todd? Probably not. Is there a big difference between Kevin Kisner and Danny Willett? Probably not, right? Like, these guys are separated by $100. $100 at every position, you leave $600 at the table. You are leaving, you're not giving up an edge. Like, you are not giving up a ton of expected value or a ton of expected fantasy points. It makes you much more unique. It makes you a bit different. I like it because I don't like to try to project ownership, guys. I don't like to try to guess at it. I'm very bad at it. Mm-hmm. So, like, leaving $500-$700 on the table, especially when you get to bigger ones, like, I can play anybody
else. Yeah, you do whatever you want. Yeah.
I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Well, speaking of which, you mentioned you know, you obviously like DJ this week, a little bit of Bryce. Is this, are you thinking, leaning toward Stars and Scrubs week, or since it's so soft, more of a balanced build and just hammering that 8-9K range?
Yeah, it's
peppering. It's peppering the 8K range.
Peppering, sorry. That's the term.
I think I would love to get two guys over like 98. So like Xander and up. If I could get two of those guys in, I think I'd be pretty happy. Now you have to make some you got to go down pretty low. And unfortunately the options get, I mean, we've got, you know, the bottom of the player pool is past champions. It's, you got like an amateur or two down there. Like it's not great. But there are some, you know, legit PGA Tour professionals in like the mid sixes. If you're willing to play them, you know, if you're willing to play Lonto, if you're willing to play Adam Hadwin, if you're willing to play Corey Connors, I think you can make a lot of really top heavy lineups, which I think is good. So that's probably the route I'm going to go. I'm comfortable playing those guys, but I know not everybody is.
So then what's your favorite? Is it Lonto? What is Lonto's price? Is it under 7,000?
6,600.
Okay, juicy. So then that's your favorite play in the 6K range, or do you like any long shots?
Munoz is pretty strong, I think. He's low key been really good. Right. He's been on a phenomenal run. He played great at the Tour Champion. I mean, and the events that he's played well, which was like BMW Tour Championship, and then both the Invitational, so like Zozo CJ Cup. Like he's been on a great run. $6,700. That's a spot I'd probably go. I don't love going any lower than Lonto at 66. Like I don't want to play Max Homa at 6,400. I'm never gonna touch Jimmy Walker. Like these, and then you get into the past champions, and that's a waste of your time. Obviously.
So don't pick Fred Couples. What do you mean?
No Freddie Couples. Also, Trevor Immelman in this lineup.
Trevor Immelman. He's only 40 years old. You know,
he's not playing. He's on the call. Yeah. Okay. Inside info for you. So he's on the call.
So I don't have to waste any time researching Trevor.
I texted Mark and I was like, how's Trevor's game right now? Like, seriously, he's $6,100. And you're right. He's like, 40, I'm like, he's got to be pretty sharp. He won it like 12 years ago. He's got to be pretty sharp.
And he was playing on a Corn Ferry last year.
I'm like, can he
or Euro, whatever.
Yeah, I'm like, can he beat like CT Pan? Like, can he do that? And Mark was like, oh yeah, he's on the call this week. So no.
So then he's WD basically and he hasn't done it yet?
I don't know if he has to.
Oh, the weekend you're saying. So like he's there on Thursday and Friday is what you're saying.
Well, no, I mean he's not gonna play. He's like doing the telecast for Golf Channel or whatever, NBC or CBS or whatever. I don't know.
Unless he's in contention, then he's just gonna give him the finger, probably, right?
He's not gonna play.
But so he won't even He won't even start Thursday.
No, my understanding is he's not even starting this event. Yeah.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I know. I was like ready to. I was ready to lock him.
So are they brothers?
Yeah.
Okay, and then so you get to hobnob with the celebrities now, Mr. Rick Rungood with CBS. How is that going? Are you nervous when you go on live air with these people? You're on the preferred lines live, and you don't seem very nervous.
I am nervous. So, I mean, we're gonna do a lot of we'll do live look-ins for the Masters because CBS has the broadcast, so they go all in. So like top of every hour, we'll like do live look-ins. The one thing that was kind of crazy is, I guess it was work day. So we do like after the round, we go on, do a recap, you know, 15 minutes, whatever, and then they play that all night long because nothing ever changes after that.
Yeah.
We got stuck on, so we're waiting for this to end, and Morikawa and JT dropped those bomb putts on each other or whatever to get to a playoff, and now we're like, shit, like we're stuck on air now.
Yeah,
like,
so then you're live on air.
We're doing live the playoff, and they're like two and three holes in, and they're showing the shots, and like, Rick, how about that lie in the bunker? I'm like, I don't know, but I can't see. I'm like looking at a monitor.
You're like, I would totally screw that lie up.
I'm like, it looks like he's far back, I guess. I don't know. So we're just like vibing for three holes until this thing ends. I mean, it was a lot of fun, but like that was scary. I did not like that.
It's been very cool to kind of see your ascension, but I have a quick one. So I was doing in the little sort of model build, I was looking at like the last 10 winners to try and find, just glean something. Like, what's my big stat going to be this week? Mm. It's tough, man. I mean, you look at the early 2000s when you had Bubba and Scott there, and it was very much bombers and driving distance and off the tee. Then you had a stretch with Spieth and Willett and these guys who, you know, aren't up there in driving distance, who hit it short. What is your go-to stat column for the Masters?
Yeah, it's tough. And it's weird because I feel like the game has changed so much in 12 years, which is kind of crazy to say. But I don't know if I have an opinion on this. I will tell you the model that I ran. So I think I'm at 11 years of Masters results at the moment. It said driving distance. It said driving distance. And it said that there was only one other course on the PGA Tour that driving distance was more important at than here at Augusta National. So I bend the knee, you know, to the stat model, right? Like I don't do like the vision, you know, the eye test stuff. That's a lot more difficult for me. But driving distance was number one. Birdie or better percentage was number two. Which makes sense. Those were the two that kind of went hand in hand. But I do think it's distance, because what you haven't seen. So even in 12 years, golf courses have gotten a lot longer. They haven't necessarily done that at Augusta National. They've taken a couple of steps. They've added a couple extra tee boxes here and there, but like they love the tradition, right? They love that it's kind
same
of
shot for every guy. Yeah. Forever.
For like a million years. So,
but does that help the shorter hitters though? Because they're getting with technology and the ball and the drivers, they're even the shorter hitters are getting a little bit longer. Like I think average driving distance is 296 now, where 2010. Yeah. Does that give those guys a little bit of an advantage at Augusta so they can have more wedges in where they wouldn't normally on most tour events who just blow it out to 7,800 yards?
Yeah, I think they're definitely more in play here, right? I mean, you saw Zach Johnson lay up on every par five and win a green jacket. I just think that, unfortunately, it's not just them that get the advantage, right? They're definitely more in play. They're definitely not, the course is not too long for them by any stretch of the imagination. But when Bryson's hitting 8-iron into every green and Brooks is hitting 7-iron into every green and Zach Johnson's hitting 5-iron into every green, like it's
for four days. Yeah.
It adds up. It really does add up for four straight days. And you know, now you have two less realistic chances at birdie every single day. It just
and you got to make those 10 footers for par when they're for birdie or for Bryson. Hey, yeah. Our guy on the Twitter machine, Ryan Henson, he wanted to ask you, how many times do you think Bryson's going to hit at 350 per round?
A lot.
All of them that aren't par threes?
So, okay. So here's the thing. So Kyle Porter, CBSSports.com, he actually did this. He went shot by shot, hole by hole. He pulled up the Google Maps. He did like the whole, like, you know, angle thing. I'm counting really like eight times. Okay, he's going to hit like over 350, like eight times. I mean, there's a couple of holes, especially. So number two is that dog leg to the left that you can kind of get down the hill a little bit. Like if he hits a good draw, rolls it down the hill, that'll be good. 15 is kind of interesting. That's another par five. There's a case to be made that you don't want to hit it as far as you can, that you want to be up on top of the hill, have the flat lie, have a good look into it. As opposed to getting down, being on the downslope,
and then having the water,
it's awkward. It's just more awkward. So I think, you know, he can hit it 350 anytime he wants. I bet he does it like eight times.
I think he's gonna drive the third hole. I think he's gonna hit the green.
I think he will too. I hate that Bryson is, I mean, he's such a lightning rod at the moment, right?
I know.
He sucks up so much oxygen from everybody. And if he wasn't as quirky and weird, like, I don't know, like it's just, it rubs a lot of people the wrong way, but he's really doing something that's never been seen before. And this is the kind of the example I'll give you. And you guys know this, like for the last 20 years, every press conference on the PGA Tour, they've asked whatever player it is about Tiger Woods. Like that's always like, oh, did you play with Tiger today? How was his round? How did he look? Blah, 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 right? It always happens. Now they're asking Tiger about Bryson. Like that's where we're at. It is different. I know a lot of people don't like him. I know he's not going to stop, but like that's a real thing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, if you remember like the early years with Tiger, even then, like a lot of the older guys who had been on tour were annoyed with those questions. While he went further in his career, they started to really embrace it. And I think Bryson's at that point where his competition is just like over it, right? I think they're just so annoyed with questions and nonstop at every interview. But that's where we're at in the game right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of an inflection point. Sorry, Chad.
No, I want to ask you about Bryson, or not Bryson, Bubba, because we know Bubba's course is, I kind of am leaning him. Martin's my co-host of the Fantasy Golf Pod, he likes him. Do you like him because of his tee to green and all that stuff, or are we going to get off him because we're afraid he can't putt and he's getting a little head case in that situation? He's getting his shirt off, he's jumping out of the, I don't know what the hell he's doing on social media.
He's sneaking up on the leaderboard, that's what he's doing. I do like Bubba. I do like Bubba. So I have a bet on Bubba. I got him at 40 though. I think he's down to 28. I would say.
Okay. So then do you want him at 28? Like if you had to do it today, would you do it?
It's, I think it's fair. I don't know if I'm in the business of betting fair lines, but I think it's true. Fair. I mean, listen, yeah, the tee to green stuff's been phenomenal. Obviously, the two green jackets go a long way, and we always know, or we've always heard, the undulations of the fairways and kind of the slopes of Augusta National, they set up really well for left-handed players. Mike Weir, Phil Mickelson, Bubba Watson have what, 6 Masters titles between them. The other thing is, and this is Mark Immelman too, who's, I mean, if anybody knows Augusta like Mark, I would be surprised. He mentioned that Augusta National likes defensive putters, right? So guys that, trickle it in, just trickle it in the cup. Ricky Fowler blazes it by the cup, right? Like he leaves himself 2.5 feet coming back. He's cool with that. Bubba wants to just drip it in the front or drip it over the edge, which usually plays well at Augusta National. So he's a bad putter, but if he can get around for four rounds kind of in good shape, yeah, I like his chances.
And now what about the patron issue? If there's no patrons to block Tiger's ball from flying off into nowhere and there's not the guy to stop it, are we going to have a problem with some of these guys that are used to just having a little bit of a buffer, like a, you know,
there's also nobody to there's also nobody to slide into Tiger's leg and try to take him out. That's so true. It's like, I guess
you can't get killed by the security guard.
It goes both ways. It's going to be weird. I think we've got a situation where, So over the years, so many times, you know, you hear the roars and the way that they bellow through Augusta National is louder and it's just different. And then you get to some areas of Augusta National, like 13T, which are completely away from the patrons, and it's quiet. And that's where guys realize, shit, I'm in the lead right now. Like, this is where the mind starts to go to wander and you start thinking about your position. So I wonder how that's going to be, Chad, where the entire course is quiet. And is the aura now everywhere? Is it nowhere? I don't know. I think it's going to be weird, especially for the guys that have played there so often for Tiger Woods. But
you think they're going to add more scoreboards then? Because typically people will just be like, oh, I heard something and that means something and I'll wait to see it. Or they got a guy yelling, hey, he just made birdie. And, you know, like, I don't know if they do or not.
Yeah, I doubt it. I bet you they'll put the scoreboards in the same exact spot that they've always been, which is like, you know, when you know you're going to have a 2 or 2.5 hole stretch where you're not going to see one or whatever it is. I don't think they're going to change it. But I think word will get out, right? You know, somebody will tell a caddy where they're at or if they want to know, right? I think that's a big part of it. But yeah, it's going to be weird. It's going to be really weird when there's nobody there on like 12T as those guys tee off there.
So it looks like we didn't have Joe for the whole time. Technical difficulties. Joe. That bet has cashed. But I wanted to ask you, are you done with the decision? Are you moving? Did you move? Have you decided?
So we are in escrow. Yeah. So
moving. You know, I'm a realtor. I love that.
Oh, moving. Okay. Yeah. So we are in the process. It'll probably be a couple of weeks before we close, but we found a place in Vegas. We're going to make the move we love Southern California. We love California, but no state income tax. We're both working from home now. So it makes a lot more sense to kind of work from wherever.
Right. So dude, that sounds great. I wish I could do that. I live in stupid Minnesota, but today was actually decently nice out, but then it's like looking terrible for the next week here. But either way,
yeah.
Rick Rungood, you've done the Fantasy Golf Pod interview. Thank you for doing that. If you want more information on Rick and you want to have a little bit more about like why they call him Rick Rungood, then you can go find that and listen to that. Is there anything you want to plug? I know everyone knows who you are that's watching this. So they're following already. So.
There's going to be a lot of stuff coming out this week. I would just say my Twitter at Rick Rungood is where I will post all of it, but there's just going to be a ton of stuff. It's going to be a great week. I'm stoked for it.
Yeah. I'm excited to try this jock market. I tried it last week. I didn't really get it. Cause I was like, I'm not going to risk it on this guy. Like, but now I'm going to risk it. Cause I think I can.
Yeah, you gotta embrace it. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Right.
Get in there.
So sign up for jock market, follow them on Instagram or wherever else, Twitter, whatever.
Yeah. They tweet. They're good. Yeah. They're great guys. I don't know if you talked to them. They're actually great guys too.
It's awesome. For sure. Well, thanks again. This has been the Preferred Lines interview portion. Tomorrow night, you will find Joe and I, hopefully if his internet work, together live, maybe again, Periscope, YouTube. But either way, iTunes, like and subscribe, all those good things to help us out because we do this free, do this for fun. We don't do this for free anymore. Oh, my God.
Can't say that.
We have a sponsor. Yeah, I can't say that. But anyway, thanks for watching. See you later, Rick.
See ya.